Today's podcast is going to be me on a short phone interview with Robert Scott Edwards, the creator of Laughs Unlimited, who's hosted such names as Bob Saget, Dave Coulier, Gary Shandling, Brian Posehn, David Carvey, Paul Poundstone, like the list goes on. And this pretty epic dude in comedy has graced me with about 20 minutes of his time. I think I might have snuck by through some miscommunication, and he might have thought I was another person. So that's why he originally took the took the interview request. That's at least my guesstimation from. I mean, he didn't seem like super standoffish. He was a great interview. The guy is definitely a really, really kind soul, but he just seemed like he might have bit into some some really green waters as far as, well, me being full of algae and me also not having next to any interview skills. I was, I guess, audibly nervous. Is the correct way to phrase that. And he still gave some good stories, a pretty hilarious one about Gary Shandling, and also his story about Joan Rivers. God, why am I blanking on her name today? One of the best comedians of all time, and I have no idea why, but I'm glad to present to you guys my first official interview, and hopefully there'll be more to come because I'm going to be just trying to find as many people in the entertainment industry, like comedians, MCs, I mean, whoever would be able to be, you know, giving kind of insight into the business on this podcast, because I've known for a while that, you know, they say like the overnight successes in comedy are really like 10-year successes, because they've been grinding it out at open mics and been writing and rewriting and, I mean, doing spots and doing little pilots for this, that, and the other. And I mean, you really have to already kind of have been doing it for a decade plus to make any serious success. Not to say that, you know, your Aziz Ansari's, or I don't know how long Dane Cook was doing it, but more what you would think of like an overnight success, where I'm pretty sure Aziz Ansari was only doing it like 3 years or something, which is almost unheard of in comedy. But I mean, really didn't show up in most of his jokes. Like, he's pretty decent, except for the Randy character, which is just kind of a lot of yelling. Like, not to throw Aziz under the bus, I love his comedy. Master of None is probably one of the best Netflix shows I've ever seen. And especially that there's an episode where he has a gay friend who he grew up with, and she and her partner are looking to, one of them wants, I think her partner wants to be artificially inseminated. They're ready to have babies. And I mean, they're well off. Like, they live in like a nice, out in the middle of nowhere, like idyllic, you know, huge house. And the whole episode, like, it's Aziz's show, and he is in the majority of I think all the episodes up until that point, but the whole episode is just her, and it's just about her and her wife trying to be artificially inseminated. Like, it's, they bring over a close friend who, like, they just leave the house for a little while and like give him a laptop, and like, you know, it obviously cuts away, but it cuts back like right after he's finished. Like, it's a very, very, like, very deep episode. And just, I mean, the thing I really love about, I mean, this is necessarily comedy. Yeah, there were some funny moments in the episode, but for the most part, it's very just a dramatic episode. And like, when an actor is able to just sit with an emotion or a thought or just a happening and like kind of make the audience, you know, really, really mull it over, and I don't know. That's just a damn good episode. I love too, because it doesn't really shoot outside of the house. I think they may go to like a market or something at one point, but it's almost entirely a closed room. Like, it's just them in their house discussing this life-changing event that they're trying to set up. And yeah, like, it maybe in a shot of outside their house when they were waiting, but it's not very like movies like Coffee and Cigarettes. That's just kind of what it reminds me of, like the closed room where it's just two people talking. And I mean, ultimately is just them two for the whole episode. They have, you know, their friend come in for a bit, but it's mainly just the two actors, and you get to really see, like, they don't have like a range of things they do, but they're very good. Like, I just, that whole show is pretty funny and pretty good, but that episode in particular just stands out as just phenomenal. It's one of my favorite episodes of television. Like, I don't know. I can't say enough good things about that show. Like, Aziz, you're freaking killing it. Like, yeah, Robert Scott Edwards was a pretty good interview. Only a 20-minute, or I'd like to have gone a little bit longer and asked a couple more questions, but for the amount of time that he allotted me, that was very, very graceful of him. I'm sure someone at his level, he's a pretty busy man, so I didn't want to keep him for too long, and we just shot the shit a little bit, and he told me some comedy stories and kind of gave me a little bit of insight that I knew a little bit, that you got to put your nose to the grindstone to get shit done in this business. And I just need to write more. I need to work out the jokes or musings, as I said in the interview, that I've written down, because none of them are really like fully fledged jokes. And I guess until I try it on stage, I can't even freaking know if it's a joke, because I'm an amazing comedian in my head. Like, I, at night, I don't know why it is, right before I go to bed, I write so damn much. Like, my brain does not stop in those, you know, 5-20 minutes, half an hour before bed, that it just keeps going. Like, like Doug Stanhope said, I'm just gonna keep freaking stealing other people's jokes for my clout, which is just proves how much of an asshole I am. But he has a joke in, oh, I'm blanking on the stand-up comedy special right now, but he's like, I tried this the other day. I tried to sleep sober, and that's the worst thing ever. There's no way to do it. I don't understand how sober people do that shit. Like, that's as soon as you lay your head down and go to sleep, that's exactly when the carnival starts going off. The do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Like, that's how my brain works, is that I can veg out all day or have, you know, maybe not very minimal thoughts, but, you know, just thoughts on what I'm supposed to get done throughout the day. Like, nothing, you know, I'm not existential or think, I mean, I was a little bit, I guess I wore all that out when I was younger, taking a lot of psychedelics, but I don't get into the realm of thought a lot, because I do a lot of things to distract myself, working or listening to podcasts or playing Pokemon Go. Like, there's 100 things I can do in a day that just keep me from thinking my own thoughts. And then when I go to sleep, I have the uncanny ability to think of like three jokes before, at least three joke premises. I mean, maybe not three fully fledged jokes before I go to bed, at least. And in my head, like, at least when I'm thinking them, I need a brain dictate, like something that can just directly dictate your thoughts to freaking to text, because I am able to think up, set up punch or like a little bit of a story or just a musing about something that's funny. Like, the audience reacts in my head, and it's generally positive at every break or so. So I am a great comedian in my head. I have an uncanny ability to just continually write, but actually writing and getting those things on a page and organizing it into a 5-minute set, like, I don't even have 2 minutes. I can maybe tell all of 30 seconds of jokes at this point, maybe a minute. I mean, I really just need to put my nose to the grindstone and start touring the clubs, maybe get on stage when I finally feel comfortable enough after a few shots. just do my best to put my best foot forward, which is my only foot, but if you don't know by now, I only have one leg. I just need to put my foot forward and try and make something out of it. I don't need Joe Rogan fame. I don't need to be Kevin Hart. I mean, don't get me wrong. The status and the ability to make people laugh at that level, that would be fucking fantastic. But I don't know if I'll ever get there. I mean, maybe one day, but that's a pretty far off dream that I'm barely taking any steps to accomplish. I started a podcast. Like, that's the most benign thing that you can fucking do. Everybody and their goddamn grandmother and their dog has a freaking podcast. And it's not impossible to start either. I mean, download an app and click record, find something that picks up audio and you're golden. You're there. And you know, previously, like, all I've done for podcasts really is D&D. I recorded a few D&D sessions and I talked about myself ad nauseum for a couple hours, but I mean, interviewing, I need to do many more of these comedy interviews because, I mean, it was insightful, definitely hearing from somebody who's been in the business for as long as he has, 40 plus years, and has been around some of the biggest stars in comedy to almost ever. I mean, Joan fucking Rivers, Dave Cooley, Gary Shandling, like Dana fucking Carvey. Like, the list goes on of really, really, really important people in my life that have positively influenced my life for a couple decades now. I mean, oh man, just Dana Carvey and his like church lady on SNL, or anybody like Joan Rivers on the Walk of Fame, not the Walk of Fame, whatever the Entertainment Tonight stuff, where she would just like make fun of people coming down the way and talk about, like, you know, fashion or dresses and do little interviews here. Like, that was my childhood. I loved that shit. That was some of the best entertaining things to watch. And the comedy has always shown through as not only being, you know, funny and something that I've thoroughly enjoyed, but insightful. Like, I really honestly believe that comedians are modern day philosophers, because you're not only thinking on something that may be a little bit out there and may take a little bit extra thought to really work it out, but you're sitting there and like reworking it until there's, you know, like jokes, like 20-30 seconds into a story about it. And I mean, the musings and the philosophical air that comedy has is, I mean, I feel like it's so important, especially with, I mean, now that Trump's at office, it's less of a, I guess, a pertinent issue. Like, people don't need to laugh as much to not be look outside and see the world on fire. But I mean, the world's still on fire. It's just, I'm not saying Biden's a saint, you know, it's just one fucking, it's just one puppet to the next. Like, that's all it really is. You know, they have controlled interests and they're bought and sold by people that have trillions of dollars. And I always say that from one election to the next, it's just an overcorrect. I mean, we're Republican and we're too conservative and we're too right wing and we're too volatile and we're too racist or whatever. And then we flip to the other side and then we're too PC and we're too liberal. And there's no, like, no one can ever find a good middle ground because we have a fucking two-party system. It pisses me off so much. And I shouldn't be getting into so much politics on just the read to an interview, which is going to be as long as the fucking interview. But that's my fault. It's Robert gave me his time and I thoroughly appreciate him for it. But, yeah, that's today's podcast. I don't have, and probably will never have, any sponsors. So, enjoy and hopefully you can glean some kind of insight from this as I did. But I mean, ultimately I kind of just got like, yeah, you need to work, dude. You need to actually put a little work in, like, this is a job, and then you can maybe make a career out of it eventually and start doing the stuff that you love. Because I mean, that's the biggest thing I kind of got away from this is like, yeah, I love comedy. I fucking live and breathe comedy. The list of comedy specials and comedians I look up on YouTube and just try and different perspectives I try and get. I've done nothing but that since I can remember. I mean, I love comedy so much, and just to be a part of it, even if it's just me making a silly podcast, trying to interview people and convince myself that I can get on stage. Like, even if it's just that, I feel a little bit accomplished, like, just with this podcast, because I've always had so much stage fright, and I've always had such trepidation to put myself out there. That's what it really comes down to, is I'm not putting myself out there, or I don't feel confident in putting myself out there, that I just don't do it. It's the, you know, I guess it's the 100 slap or the 99 slaps rule. You know, you get the 99 slaps and that one girl will have sex with you. And, sorry, that was my phone. And, that's just the thing. I need to get my 99 slaps before I get anything that kind of hits. And, since that was my girlfriend calling, I'm going to call her back. And I love you guys, and thank you for listening to this for whatever reason and however you found it. Yeah, please support however you found this, because I'm by no means prolific. But thank you guys. I love you. I'm trying to do more of an informal thing with my podcast anyway, less like, I mean, yeah, I definitely want to know some things about you. Like, you have a pretty prolific resume with, like, you know, Gary Shandling and Bob Saget. I mean, why am I blanking on her name? One of the most famous comics to ever exist.
Ellen DeGeneres, or Lois Bromfield, or
the one that used to do Joan Rivers. Joan Rivers. That's the one. Joan, yeah, Rivers. Yeah. It's just, it just mentioned. Yeah, it just mentions at the bottom of your little sheet that you got shushed by her, and yeah, that was something I'd wanna ask about. But so I got it recording now, and hopefully it picks up from my little microphone your speaker audio just fine. And I'll just, you know, start off, do a little introduction. Everybody, this is Robert Scott Edwards, a CEO, professional MC, and he you started Laughs Unlimited, like the original.
Yeah, everybody that's listening to Eric's new podcast, Aspiring Comics, this is Scott Edwards. Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. Eric is attempting to kick off a great new podcast to talk about stand-up comedy, and that is what I do.
Yeah. And I saw your profile on the, I'm not sure what page I actually went through to find you, now that I think about it, just the podcast guest one. And I was just like, yeah, he sounds a little out of my league as far as like being a little more prolific in stand up than I am. But hey, I'm just starting out. So
no, that's no problem. I am an older gentleman. I've got 40 plus years on the fringe of show business. I've been doing my own podcast, Stand-up Comedy, your host and MC, for a couple of years now. Be sure to check it out. It's all about the famous and not so famous stand-up comics that are out there entertaining. And you mentioned earlier that I've had some blessings to work with some pretty popular people. Robin Williams worked my stage. Bob Saget, Dave Coulier, Tommy Chong from Cheech and Chong fame. They've all had a chance. But for aspiring comics, I think a good story would be that back in 1980, there was a new TV show out called Bosom Buddies, and the star of that show had to do a little stand-up comedy set. So Bob Saget brought him up to my club, and he worked for a full week for free. And I kind of taught him how to do stand-up comedy, and Bob Saget wrote material for him. And that guy ended up having a pretty good career. Have you heard of Tom Hanks?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, heard of Tom Hanks? Are you kidding? I mean, Castaway is one of the
I was trying to be funny there.
best movies.
Tom, though, did have to learn how to do stand-up comedy. He did a set on his very first sitcom, Bosom Buddies, which we saw air a couple weeks later. But it was great to be involved early in his career. And then Gary Shandling, when he first came out from Arizona, his very first road gig was at my club. I paid him $150 for a week of work, and Gary Shandling was the opening act and just getting started in what ended up being a meteoric career.
Yeah, that's pretty comical just to think about Gary Shandling back in the day, only getting $150 to perform. He's one of the
and
greats.
If you go to my website, standupcomedyyourhostandmc.com, there's pictures of a lot of these celebrities on my stage, including Gary Shandling on that very first week back in 1980.
That's great. Well, yeah, I guess let's get into a couple interview questions. Since this is my first time, I'm obviously going to be a bit of a green interviewer, so my apologies. But
you're great. Don't worry about it. I'm excited for you.
thank you, audience. Thank you very much. Just curious. So, what is the story behind Joan Rivers shushing you? What did would you say out of line that she had to she had to get you back in order for?
Well, as a comedy producer, and I ended up opening a chain of three comedy clubs. First one in August 1980, called Laughs Unlimited. And as a producer, I had spent a lot of time in the Bay Area and Los Angeles, scouting out potential talent. And I was in LA, and I was at the Comedy Store on Sunset Boulevard, and coincidentally, tying us all together, Gary Shandling was on stage performing. Well, Gary and I were old friends, and I'd seen his act 100 times, and I did a bad thing because I had a booth full of women I was trying to impress. I'm talking to the women while he's performing, and all of a sudden I hear this, I'm like, and I go, what the heck? And I turn around and I look, and leaning out of the booth next to me was Joan Rivers going,
shh. That's pretty good.
And you know, I have kind of a deep voice and it carries, and I wasn't trying to be rude, but I was interrupting Gary's set, and I had to apologize to Gary. And but I forever can carry with me that I was shushed by Joan Rivers, so that doesn't happen often.
Yeah, no, that's definitely something you put on your resume. That's pretty fantastic. Like,
well, when you're in on the fringe of show business, things happen. I was at a theater in Los Angeles and Hollywood for the premiere of Steve Martin's The Jerk, and unbeknownst to the audience, when I went to the street corner, me and my friends were standing there talking about the movie. And right next to us was Steve Martin, but he was in full, you know, camo. He didn't want anyone to recognize him. So he had glasses, a hat, and his shirt pulled, his collar pulled up so you couldn't see him. So he was secretly going to the movie to see how the audience responded. We didn't call him out on it because, you know, we respected his privacy. But Steve Martin was standing next to us as we were talking about the movie we had just seen with him starring in it.
Oh yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, that sounds like a Steve Martin move. A little bit to like my questions, or at least what I have as far as like just a few, you know, preliminary like podcast questions I can ask people that, you know, I'm not looking for, like, I want to interview you, yes, because I'm interested in your career, and I'm interested, I mean, even if I could get something along the lines of you and just be on the fringes and have a prolific, you know, comedy career, that'd be fantastic. Like, ultimately, I'd like to be, you know, like a Doug Stanhope or something, just a road dog who does his own thing and doesn't take crap from nobody and still has the ability to carve a path out and a career out for himself. Like, something like that would be fantastic. But even if I end up writing on a show or just something real small, like, I would just love to do pretty much anything in the entertainment industry because, I mean, yeah, just.
Well, stand-up comedy is a good vehicle to a lot of things. So a lot of the comics I work with did stay in stand-up comedy, some went into comedy writing for TV and movies. One of my early acts was Ed Solomon. He ended up writing Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure and all the Men in Black movies. There's some that become just straight up actors, and there's others that I know. One guy, Stan Sellers, who still performs on stage occasionally, but he's made a great living over two decades as a voice artist, voiceover work, which is the voices you hear in the background of movies and TV. A couple guys even went into animation and do the voices for animation. Dave Coulier and Carlos Alazraki, who started off as an opening act MC for me, are huge in the animation world. They do voices on all kinds of the cartoons we watch today. Carlos Alazraki is currently three of the voices on a very popular Cartoon Network show called Casa Grande.
I haven't caught that one. I do I do watch a fair amount of cartoons, but I haven't kept up with many of the newer ones coming out. I think the last one was We Bear Bears that I watched, which has another comedian on it, Dimitri Martin. And I mean, he's fantastic as well.
Well, he was also the voices on Ren and Stimpy, if you go far back.
Oh, really? I thought, so I know Mel Blanc and was it Billy West? Had a lot to do with that, I believe. Because I definitely love voice actors too, but I only know maybe a handful. Like Billy West being the pinnacle. I mean, he's just a legend. Like he's a phenom.
See, I would argue with you, Eric. I think Mel Blanc's the pinnacle. But
okay,
you're right.
Yeah.
There's a lot of work involved in doing animation. In fact, my godson, Kyle Stobener, is an animator and actually does some of the animation for Casa Grande. But my point was, is that if you get into stand-up comedy, Eric, and you kind of earn your chops and work hard, and if you shoot me your email, I'll send you a free copy of my book. Anybody that's listening to this, if you email me at scottscomedystuff@gmail.com, I will send you a free electronic copy of my book called 20 Questions Answered About Being a Stand-Up Comic, and it includes pictures of me with certain celebrities, including Tom Hanks, Bob Saget, Dave Coulier, Jay Leno, Jerry Seinfeld, Yakov Smirnoff, but also it teaches you what it takes to go from amateur to professional.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much exactly the kind of information I'm looking for, because I've been a comedy nerd since, I don't know, maybe like anywhere from 5 to 8. I don't exactly remember when or where I broke into enjoying comedy so much, but I remember from like around 8 or 9 or so, like watching Comedy Central Presents religiously. I mean, the Mitch Hedbergs, the Mark Marins, all of the great comics that they've presented. I've seen a good
Mitch Hedberg 50% and Artie Barker both got their start at my clubs.
What was the last one?
Mitch Hedberg and Arch Barker.
Oh, nice. Arch Barker. Nice. Yeah, he's funny as well, too.
He lives in Australia now where he's a huge celebrity. But I just interviewed him for my podcast a few weeks ago, and he is doing very well. But he got his start out of the Bay Area, he and Mitch Hedberg, Brian Posehn, and several others. And they all worked at my club as opening acts and open micers.
Yeah. That's I don't know if you've ever seen the movies. I think they made two of them, The Comedians of Comedy. But I mean, I've probably seen those 24 times. Like Patton Oswalt, Maria Bamford, Brian Posehn, and Zach Galifianakis. I mean, all of them have amazing careers now. But like when they were just, you know, breaking into it and getting past, you know, being an open micer almost. Like that is one of the best movies ever.
Yeah, the my clubs, Laughs Unlimited, were kind of they were A rooms, Eric, which meant it was kind of the last stepping stone before you went out as that you might get celebrity. Many of them stayed terrific stand-up comics and had great careers and just never got famous. But people like Brian Posehn went on to acting and then big careers in comedy. Arch Barker. So there's that. But I'm a little bit older, and so the people I worked with were from the 80s and the 90s. I sold my clubs in 2001, and I still produce shows, but now I do it for fundraisers and special events. Back in the day, I also produced three TV series. all about stand-up comedy. So there's a lot of history there.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Just because, I mean, 40 years in the business, you've seen the greats come and go, and like that's just great. Like having such a resume of all of the best comedians at your disposal, like, which kind of brings me to one of my questions is, it doesn't necessarily have to pertain to comedy or like being seeing someone on stage, but just what's one of the times you've laughed the hardest, like in life, you know, just something silly that happened, like a fart, I mean, something, anything.
Well, I've had, you know, I can't pick anything specific because I've worked with people from your dad's generation all the way through, people all the way from your dad's generation, like Soupy Sales and Pat Paulson, all the way up to the people of the 80s and the 90s. And the things that have happened that have been extra special was Tommy Chong from Cheech and Chong fame worked for me twice. He brought his guitar and amplifier, and I got goosebumps when he played their famous song, Earache My Eye, live on my stage. I'm a huge Monty Python fan, and before he passed, Graham Chapman came up and worked for me, and that was amazing because I got to hang with him before and after the show and on stage. He told stories about hanging out with the Rolling Stones and the Beatles and a lot of other celebrities, and he was amazing. So what's great about being on the fringe of show business is you get a chance to sometimes meet your heroes. And let's see, a good story, it's not that the funny that you're thinking of, but Dana Carvey was a young act out of the Bay Area. And before his Saturday Night Live fame, he was working my club. And we were sitting in a jacuzzi after a show and having drinks. And he was saying, man, I'm excited, but I'm nervous. And I go, what's going on, Dana? And he goes, I just had a call from Lorne Michaels, and they want me in New York next week to showcase for SNL. And it was just so great to be able to share that moment with them.
Yeah.
Well, here's a funny story that your audience might enjoy. I was talking about Gary Shandling back when he was new. He quickly became a headliner, but back in the day when comedy was just getting going, on the midweek shows, sometimes we had a small audience, and we would do shows anytime there was more than 10 people. One time we had a show of about 18 people, and Gary Shandling was the headliner, and this guy gets up in the audience to go to the bathroom. And Gary kind of stops and watches him and says, wow, that's too much of a percentage of the audience. Come on, come with me. And he took the whole audience into the men's room, and he went and packed, you know, like 10, 12 people, men and women, in the men's room. This guy's at the urinal trying to do his business. And then Gary got stood right behind him and then just went on with his act like nothing had changed. It was hilarious. And never happened before or since. It was amazing. And the guy was had a little performance anxiety. He got finished. We all stood there. Gary's still doing a set. The guy washed his hands. And then the whole audience went back into the showroom. But it was, you know, those kind of moments are unique and fun.
Yeah, that's pretty great to be a part of a conga line of comedy, just from the stage to the bathroom and back. That's pretty silly.
Yeah, the audience experienced something very special that, you know, I'm sure that they had fun with it. But it is, you know, great to have those connections back in the early days. I know that you're just an aspiring comic. There was a young comedian that had just come out from Boston that worked for me. By the name of Paula Poundstone. And she was really raw, a little esoteric, but I really liked her. And so she's the only act in the history of my clubs that I allowed to work multiple weeks in a row while each and every night we worked on her material and her presentation to help her develop her comedy. And while working for me, she met Will Durst and some people out of the Bay Area, and they ended up introducing her to Robin Williams, and Robin took her under his wings and helped her develop even more. And of course, she ended up being a huge celebrity comedian. And there's a lot of people that had rough starts and had to do a lot of hard work in the early days, but were able to make it in comedy. And Eric, I know you can do that.
Well, I definitely appreciate that. I just, the thing I'm trying to get over now is stage fright, just actually getting on stage. I need to start touring the open mics around Denver and try and figure out if there's any of the things that I've written down that, I mean, they're musings at this point. They're not even really jokes. Like, I just have a funny premise for an idea, and then I like write it down and I'm like, yeah, I'll write that out later. And then I just never get to it. And I need to put my nose to the grindstone and actually get some
there is
writing
some
done.
Discipline. Yeah, Eric, there is some discipline involved, and you'll need to work at your craft a little bit. But like I said, if you and the audience want to email me at scottscomedystuff@gmail.com, I'll send you all electronic copies of my book. And there's a whole chapter on stage fright, and there's some chapters on how important it is to write comedy, take notes, record yourself, things that will help you improve. I am running out of time, but I did want to make sure that you and everybody in your audience gets a chance to listen to my podcast, Stand-Up Comedy, your host and MC. It's on all the directories. And by interviewing other comics and showcasing stand-up comedy from the past, I think there's a lot to be learned. And I know you'll get something out of it, Eric.
Oh, yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, I always think of the movie for Netflix that Marie Bamford did called Old Baby, and she like shows the process of, you know, having jokes and then performing it for herself in the mirror, and then performing it for a couple friends, and then performing it for like a small audience, and then performing it on stage. Like, it's one of the greatest insights into writing I've seen in a while. And yeah, that's just what it comes down to ultimately, is my fear of, well, I mean, that's the majority of comedy is kind of like being judged, but that's a bit of a, I guess, trigger for me. I'm not the best at that. Like, 'cause I put other people's thoughts that are not probably their thoughts. They just run through my head constantly, and I just can't, I need to get over that.
Well, with practice, you will, Eric, and I appreciate this opportunity to be on your first podcast. I know it'll do well. You'll build a niche audience, and just keep being honest and keep getting some guests that you can talk to about your interest in stand-up comedy, and I know you'll do well, so thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I won't hold you off anymore if you need to be going, but just before you end up heading out, it's not going to reach a lot of people, but is there anything you specifically you'd like to promote?
I would go to the podcast. I think it'd be helpful. My book, 20 Questions Answered About Being a Stand-Up Comic, is available on Amazon, and my website, scottscomedystuff.com, has a lot of opportunity. There's an online comedy course. There's some a video membership where you can see some of the stars of today from when they were not stars. And so lots of opportunity. And thanks, Eric, for giving me this chance to share.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Robert, you have a great rest of your day. Thank you very much for gracing me with your time. It's been a pleasure.
And Eric, be sure to email me a link when you do launch so that I can help spread the word and build your audience.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'll be just recording a little bit of an intro of me talking, and then, yeah, this will be going right up.
All right. Thanks, buddy.
All right. Yeah, we'll have to set this up again and do this another time, because I definitely an extended conversation with you. Yeah.
All right, Eric. Sounds good.
All right. You take it easy. Thank you.
You too.
That was a little bit shorter than I had a light, but not bad. Definitely not bad. All right. Stop recording.